The Bulldogs Extra podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's. Cure your cravings. Stop in today or visit Zaxby's.com.
From between the hedges at Sanford Stadium to the practice fields, from Stegman Coliseum and wherever else the Bulldogs are playing, it's time to talk Georgia sports. From the Athens Banner-Herald, here are your hosts, Mark Weiser and Ryan Dennis.
It is time. It's Georgia Vanderbilt week, and welcome into the podcast with the new name you might have noticed, the Bulldogs Extra podcast. Ryan, is there a lot of pressure with that name? Is there more anticipation that we have to produce a better podcast now?
Nah, we'll keep it the same.
but wait.
But you do
I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure that it's only five stars on there. Yeah, the nice reviewers out there.
Hey, they all love it. Getting some good comments. Hey, by the way, Mark, I don't know if you noticed that our intro might have been a little different. We're working on getting the tweaks and the bugs out, and we'll get a new nice intro here shortly.
Are we going to get like a house band to perform that intro?
I mean, we got plenty of good acts here in Athens. We should
work on that. I'll look forward to that.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so finally, preseason practices are about over. We got a couple more Wednesday and Thursday. We were recording this, by the way, about 2:15-ish in downtown Athens. And
on a Wednesday.
Don't need to hustle over to the practice fields because Georgia has shut down practice on Wednesday. Usually it's the last open practice during a game week. But I actually projected earlier this week that this one might be closed because, look, it's I know it's, you know, Vanderbilt might not put the fear into Georgia fans, but this is the biggest game until Notre Dame. I mean, you have Murray State and Arkansas State the next couple of weeks. Plus, it's not a typical Wednesday practice. They might be doing more, you know, things that they do on Thursdays, which usually is a closed practice since they've had so much time to gear up for it. But we will have some actual Georgia football this weekend on Saturday, and we'll talk about what we'll be looking for. We'll do some over-under picks on the Georgia players and welcome in Adam Sparks from the Tennessean to talk Vanderbilt. And we'll also make our weekly picks at the end of the podcast. Ryan, I don't know if you've mentioned this last podcast or not, but tell them how they can play this picks contest we got going on. And I don't know if we came up with a name for that yet.
I don't know what it's called. Picks. I think it's Wiser Than Wiser. You know, beat the beat reporter. Maybe that's what we should have called it. Beat the beat reporter. But you go in, go to onlineathens.com/contest. It's now up and live, and you can also sign up for our Bulldog Extra newsletter, and you can get that in your newsletter and everything, and you'd be feeling like you can beat Mark Weiser every week.
Why isn't it called like Demolish Dennis?
Because I'm not on the beat like you are. Huh. I'm not a well-known figure like Mark Weiser.
All right, let's talk a little bit about some news that has popped up in the last week, if you want to call it that. Not too much news really coming out of Georgia camp now is, you know, things have kind of been decided for the most part. I mean, they're not laying out there. I mean, they're not putting out a depth chart. You know, Vanderbilt did put out a depth chart this week. How is it that Georgia can get away without putting out a depth chart, but Vandy does? Don't they need to kind of coordinate that to make sure that it's, you know, I mean, not that the depth chart on Vandy is necessarily like, you know, the gospel, but Georgia didn't throw out anything.
Well, you know how those depth charts go nowadays. Aziz Jalari or Walter Grant or, you know.
Georgia Tech had like, I don't know what they call it. It's not the cut list or something. They list like 50 or 60 guys just by position, basically.
to go up to Clemson.
Anyway, James Coley is going to be on the field, the offensive coordinator, which, you know, he did the same at Miami. Jim Chaney last couple of years was up in the box, although some readers reminded me on Twitter that he wasn't always. I guess, wasn't it a deal where after the Nick Chubb and Sonia Michel powwow with Chaney in the office after that Florida, was it the Florida game where he didn't get enough touches? Did he go upstairs then? I think there was a trend. I didn't Google it, my own stories back in that season to find out, but I think it was something to that.
Hey, I managed to watch some of the SEC championship from last year. It was on the other night. I know a lot of our fans probably
How'd that game turn out?
Yeah, let's don't talk about it, I guess, for our loyal listeners who...
What did you learn that you didn't know?
I mean, they showed that little fisheye camera, you know, in the corner. Well, yeah. Was Coley not sitting... Well, he was sitting next to Chaney, was he not?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, so, I assume... What are you saying?
I'm just wondering why they wouldn't continue that if he was up there already.
Why wouldn't he be upstairs again?
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, in Miami, he was on the field. Okay. I mean, Mike Bobo did both.
Yeah, that's what I remember Mike, yeah.
But mostly upstairs.
I just feel like offense coordinators are always upstairs. So
I mean, I would guess that
better view of the field.
Kirby didn't give us their whole operations, but Cortez Hankton maybe will be upstairs. Yeah. You know, who else could they have up there?
One of the 18 gratis.
If there were two guys up there last year, so you'd have, will Del McGee be upstairs? I don't know. We'll see how that, yeah. Although there's...
I feel like Del's always down there to, you know...
There's a limit
the
about,
right,
like...
running back in and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you can have some analysts up there, I guess, although the rules might have changed. I'm not exactly sure. There was a thing about how many guys could be on the headsets, and so who knows. But have you ever seen, I assume I've been in more press boxes than you and seen coaches more, but have you seen, probably in high school games you've seen it maybe, I don't know. You ever see a coach grab a little bit of like the halftime hot dog and take it with him to the box? You want to name names?
Yeah. I think it was Schumann. Yeah. Schumann grabbed a hot dog.
Glenn Schumann, if you're listening, that's Ryan. Dennis is calling you out.
And it was a pretty big lead, so we all just kind of laughed about it, I think.
I'm not going to complain. I mean, they don't charge the media for the halftime food.
I don't complain about any type of, you're picky, though.
Well, I'm just saying that I wouldn't say that the hot dog served at halftime at Sanford Stadium in the press box. You know, would they be on... drive-ins, diners, and whatever that show is called.
I don't even know if it'd be served on the corner of downtown, but it's not bad.
I mean, just like consistency in the color of a hot dog.
Well, the thing about it is, I eat it because it's free, even if I'm not hungry. But Mark Weiser's a guy that's picky, and he'll say, I don't want a hot dog. I brought my own sandwich. So
I haven't done that, but I might start doing that more this year. Yeah, maybe.
Bring your own sandwich?
Well, I don't know. We'll see.
Come on, man. Eat the food.
Hey, some significant news as far as SEC and Georgia trying to win that title and make the playoff. Dylan Moses, the All-American linebacker for Alabama, has a knee injury that's going to require surgery. Some reports from beat writers in Alabama are saying it's an ACL out for the year. Nick Saban on the SEC teleconference today didn't go so far, just said that he's having surgery, will be out. I don't know if he used the word indefinitely, but he didn't kind of lay out exactly how long he would be out. You know, I was going to start the over-under, but we have our guests coming up and we have a break to get to. Maybe we'll start the over-under and finish it on after our interview with Adam. But let's start this. Okay. All right.
Yeah, go for it.
This game at Vanderbilt is a hot ticket. You know, you wouldn't necessarily think so, but it's a season opener.
A lot of excitement around Georgia.
Yeah. What percent of Georgia fans would you, let's say, let's call it 60%, would you say over or under Georgia fans filling up Vanderbilt Stadium?
Okay, I'm trying to do a picture in my head.
I'm going with 62, so I'm saying over.
Well, that's a good call. Got the picture in my head, you know. Georgia-Florida split right down the middle. I think that if you go way past that, and from what I can have seen at Nashville in the past, it's going to be way past that. I'll go over. I'll say closer to 65. I think it's going to be a lot of red in that stadium.
All right, Ticket IQ says tickets are going for an average of $145, which is the best price for this week one nationally in terms of the most expensive. The second best – now, look, it's only 41,000-ish at Vanderbilt, so you're not going to have as many opportunities to grab a ticket. But
this is just like for a home and home not neutral site.
No, I think it includes neutral sites too. Yeah, the second best is $82 for Houston, Oklahoma. So if you have a ticket – and you want to make some money, you can probably do it, you know.
Yeah.
Go get a steak in Nashville.
I think that's the plan for Friday night. We'll see.
All right, interesting. All right, Zamir White, I think Kirby said something like that he's raring to go for this game, and you know, players have kind of gushed about him in practice. What will his rushing line be? Will he have 50 or more yards? I am saying 33 yards on 5 carries.
Yes, I like the carry number. I mean, isn't that what we kind of were
is he going over 50 or not?
No, he's going. I think he's going to be under. I think you put out some good numbers there. I think I think you can get to 40, but I like the number of carries because I mean you're easing him in slowly. So yeah, I'll go under with you. I think under 50. What would the place would go nuts? The 62% or more of Georgia fans would go nuts if he broke off like a. You know, a long run on his first run. That would, of course, it might doom him too, as far as expectations go. But
we mentioned the 5-star reviews that you guys have been so kind to give us.
Thank you, guys.
Don't forget keep to shoot coming. Us a review at the Apple Store or in the Google Podcast app, and we appreciate that. And thanks for tuning in each week. This is the Dog Bites. No, it's not anymore. It's now Bulldogs Extra Podcast, presented by Zaxby's. All right, joining us now for the perspective on the Vanderbilt side is Adam Sparks, beat writer for the Tennessean, who covers the Commodores. And Adam, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good to be back on. How we doing?
Doing well, doing well. Getting geared up for the road trip to Nashville. Big question, I guess, in the Commodore camp, at least to those that cover the team, is probably the starting quarterback. I understand that. Mason let the quarterbacks know last week. So who do you expect will be the starter? Will it be the grad transfer from Ball State or the junior that I guess was away from the team last season due to a little discipline?
Yeah, I think it'll be Riley Neal, the Ball State grad transfer. I think there's some concerns that it took this long to decide. But Derek Mason wanted to be He wanted to string it out. He wanted a pretty good competition, and I think that's what he got. He has not announced. Could be Neal or Wallace. I tend to think it's Riley Neal because I thought that in the spring. I thought that in the early fall, and I think they wanted to be sure before they decided he was the guy. Riley Neal started 32 games in his career at Ball State. He played in Big Ten games against Big Ten teams. He played, I think, against Notre Dame. He threw for 7,000 something yards in his career. So he's a very seasoned guy. The backup, who I think will be the backup, Deuce Wallace, was suspended last year, so he missed last season. He was Kyle Shermer's backup before that. He's only thrown 22 passes, played 4 games, again in a backup role. They're both a little mobile. Deuce Wallace is a little more mobile than Neal is. Neither one of them are really burners. They're just guys that can get out of the pocket and pick up 6-8 yards when they need to. Certainly more mobile than Kyle Shermer was. But Neal is the prototypical 6'6", tall, strong-armed guy, what you would think an SEC, maybe an NFL quarterback would look like. But he's just learning the offense, and so I think there are limitations within that. But I think they feel like, regardless of this game, I think they feel like Neal is the better option throughout the season, that he has the higher ceiling. So maybe that doesn't show in game one, but when you get to lesser opponents in the middle of the schedule, his experience against Georgia and other better teams, ranked teams, will pay off by then.
Now, is this a gamesmanship type deal that Mason wouldn't announce a starter? I mean, why is he kind of not told everybody else yet?
Yeah, I think to some extent it's because it's the opener. But he's kind of done this in the past. I mean, when Kyle Shermer became the starter, they took his red shirt off midway through his freshman year. It was game 6 against Missouri, and they won that game 10-3, very ugly game, but They didn't tell anybody they were taking the red shirt off. That same year, I think Johnny McCrary was the starter at the beginning of the year. I don't think they told anybody until they announced it basically in the press box right before the game. I think Derek Mason is a little bit gun-shy of making these decisions and making it too much of a storyline. All the way back to his first season, 2014, when he started 4 different quarterbacks, most of any team in the country in that season. And in some games, he switched like 3 different times. So he doesn't want that mess again, and I think he feels like it will lessen the chatter if he doesn't tell anybody until they play the game.
Well, I'm sure that, for that game in Nashville, and Vanderbilt is expecting a lot of Bulldogs to come that way. I think there was a report that 70% of the tickets or something have been bought on vividseats.com or something like that. But, you know, I know Derek Mason made a big deal at the media days about how they will have fans there, but, I mean, doesn't seem like it's going to happen. I mean, why can they not get more, you know, loyal Vanderbilt fans to come and kind of, you know, show more support even for big openers like this?
Well, I mean, this is going back about a century that Vanderbilt has had issues bringing people in. I mean, there's a lack of tradition. Obviously, they've won a little bit more under James Franklin and now Derek Mason. They went to some bowl games. They were 6-7, went to a bowl game last year. So they've had a little more success. It's taking so much time to build up a fan base. They have a new athletic director this year, and they are adding a few amenities that aren't going to show up as much in this game, but will as the season goes along. Doing small renovations to the bathrooms, which may seem like nothing, but that's been a huge complaint by fans over the years. Alcohol sales start, as they do for about half the SEC, that they'll start at Vanderbilt. You know, they're going to have a DJ deck, an actual DJ up in the student section. They have a new video board that they're going to debut. I mean, they're trying anything to try to bring people in. I don't think any of that is going to necessarily work overnight. It's certainly not going to make a difference in this game. You know, on as far as, you know, Vandy fans not coming in instances like this, there's a lot of Vandy fans that are like, they're practical, maybe even practical to a fault, because Vandy fans, basketball fans, often sell their season tickets to just the Kentucky game in basketball. They do that just for the Georgia game, or back a couple years ago, they sold them just for the Alabama game. It's, you know, if you can buy a season ticket for $200 or $300 and you can sell one game to somebody for $150, $200, you know, you're almost getting your season tickets for free. Again, that's sometimes overly practical, I think, to other SEC fans. Vandy fans, I think, look at it and say, three touchdown underdog to Georgia. I don't need to see that. I'll just have my profit on this one, pay for my tickets for the rest of the season when Vandy does have a better chance to win.
Vanderbilt lost offensive coordinator Andy Ludwig to Utah, and they promoted Jerry Godowski. What does that mean for this offense? What impact does that have, given the fact that they have the so-called Big Three back with Lipscomb and Vaughn and Pinckney?
Yeah, most of the tweaks, changes, I think, are probably going to show up as the season goes along, not necessarily in this game. I think Godowski would like to spread things out a little more than Ludwig, but the as he says, the nuts and bolts are going to be the same. The reason that he was promoted within as the offensive coordinator, and Godowski had been the quarterback's coach, tight ends coach, other things, all the way back to Derek Mason's original staff, and they had a pre-existing relationship. The reason he was elevated within the staff is, for one word, continuity. They liked the structure that Andy Ludwig had, Derek Mason did, a pro-style run game, multiple tight ends. Derek Mason likes that. He wanted Jerry Godowski to run something similar and then tweak it here and there. You'll see a lot of the tweaks on down the line, but you know, as you mentioned, Keyshawn Vaughn was very good in this offense last year, especially in the second half of the season when they finally made him the primary ball carrier. Jared Pinckney is a late first, maybe second round NFL draft pick. Kalijah Lipscomb led the SEC in catches last year. They have three good pieces that have performed in that previous offense. They don't want to change too much and therefore not utilize those three seniors. So there'll be very few changes, I think. There'll be a few, but most of the changes that are going to be made are going to be because there's a different quarterback back there, not Kyle Shurmur. And in that way, I think maybe some of the offense will be simplified. We'll see if that helps or hurts.
Of course, you mentioned Derek Mason several times and his new staff. It's kind of hard to believe he's entering season six there. I mean, it seems like just yesterday James Franklin was there and all that. But he's been to two bowls in the last 3 years. You know, what's the state of the program under him? Of course, you know, he had a lot to live up to, I'm sure, with when Franklin left. And, you know, how do the fans, you know, see him, and how long do you think he'll still be around Vandy?
Generally speaking, the fans are pretty happy with him. You know, there's the percentage lessens though usually around late September, October. You know, kind of the narrative, the timeline that Derek Mason follows every year is people are really excited about him going into the season. And then a couple, three losses in, people get a little perturbed. And then by about mid-October, everybody wants to fire him. And then he'll win two in a row, three out of four, and get them either in bowl contention or, like you said, two in the last 3 years, to a bowl. I think this is the last 4 years they've gone into the last month of the season with a bowl within reach where they had to win two out of four, three out of four. And that's when people usually jump back on the bandwagon and say, okay, maybe this guy does know what he's doing. So it changes throughout the year. He got a contract extension this offseason after going to the bowl. Some people thought that was a little too early. But long-term, he's locked in contractually. I don't know if that means 4 years or 5 years because it's a private school. We don't know the contract situation. But he still had plenty of time left on his previous contract to give him an extension, even if it was just for 1 year. And the new AD, Malcolm Turner, locks in pretty well. If Derek goes 4-8 this year, I think he could be in the hot seat next year. If he goes 6-6, then he's going to be fine. The AD would like to keep him around long-term and build the program with new facilities around him.
Adam, what do you see as the key to this game for Vanderbilt to still be hanging around come late third quarter, early fourth quarter?
Shorten the game, run the ball well, convert third downs, score every red zone trip they have, especially because, you know, Georgia's got a phenomenal kicker. Vandy's got a so-so kicker. So you've got to score points every time in the red zone. And I say shorten the game. Just Vandy needs long drives. They need to get Georgia off the field. I mean, as in most season openers, I think the answers to the keys to the game are usually kind of generic, and I think that's for good reason because we don't know entirely what these two teams are going to be good at. But we know Georgia is going to, you know, they're going to be tough run defense, and they're going to be tough rush offense. And Vandy's got to be good on both sides of that. I don't have as much confidence in Vandy being able to grind out yards against Georgia. That's what they need to do. I'm not so sure that they can. But maybe that's where a Keyshawn Vaughn can maybe be a little bit of a difference because he's one of the best big play threats in the nation, certainly in the SEC. You know, his last game out in the Texas Bowl against Baylor, he had, I think it was three runs of 66 yards or more. If he can get a couple like that, break a couple runs, then you don't have to grind it out. Maybe you can keep pace with Georgia for a while just from that. But one way or another, Vandy's got to keep Georgia's offense off the field, and they've got to convert third downs. They didn't do either of those very well in the last two meetings against Georgia.
All right, Adam was kind enough to take part in our weekly picks, which you can find in Saturday's game day section. If you can pick it up, and I guess I can say that Adam picked Georgia, but you know, what is it, 21 points? We didn't do the spread. Maybe he would have them within seven. I don't know. What do you think?
We made our picks here in Tennessee and against the spread,
yeah.
And I did waffle back and forth on the Vandy Georgia, but I actually went with Georgia. I think this would be maybe a single digit margin at the half. I think it's pretty competitive to a half.
Right.
I just tend to think Georgia's gonna score two or three touchdowns straight to pull away in the late third, early fourth.
All right, you can read Adam's stuff at the Tennessean.com, I think, is the website name. And remind them where they can find you on Twitter.
Twitter, easy, at Adam Sparks.
All right, Adam, appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you Saturday at Vanderbilt Stadium.
All right, guys. Y'all have a good one.
All right, let's pick up where we left off with the kind of the over-under thing. Let's talk now about George Pickens, the much-talked-about freshman wideout, five-star out of Hoover, Alabama, who is not going to be starting, it seems to be. Looks like it's going to be Matt Landers, Demetrius Robertson, and Tyler Simmons. Over-under on catches for George Pickens, I'm going to ask you at four.
That's
and I will time. I will say under. I'll say two for 29. Did we do this already?
No, we didn't do.
We did Zamir. Yeah,
but I think four is too high. I mean, I don't expect him to come out and have a breakout game or anything. Hey, I would even be surprised if he got to two, to be honest with you. I mean, I just don't know how much they'll want to throw a freshman into the fire just that quick.
All right, 1,000-yard rushers. They did it in 2017 with Sony and Nick. Last year with DeAndre Swift and Elijah Holyfield. Will there be two 1,000-yard rushers this year? Actually, I guess you got to say one. You have to say over, under. Well, I guess you got to say
one and a half. Let's set it at one and a half.
Yeah, one and a half. I will say there will only be one. I say only DeAndre Swift.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see.
I mean, here's the thing. I don't even know who's going to be the second leading
rusher.
That's
what I'm saying. Like, is
it going to be Herrion? I mean, is it going to be Zamir?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, Herrion's your two right now, but right. I mean, if Zamir's, you know, gets to the form that everybody thinks he should be at,
yeah.
But I still don't think, because they're going easy men, that he'll get to 1,000. I mean, I think, you know, it'd be hard for him to get to 800 or something like that. So, and Herrion, I mean, but of course, we didn't see Holyfield, I don't think, last year's 1,000-yard rusher. So, you never know. You know, and I think Cook, he's not going to be the type of ground. Listen to me. You're looking at me funny.
No, I'm just saying. I'm shaking my head. No, I don't.
That's what I'm
that.
Saying. Like, yeah. He's going to be more of a, yeah. You know, scat, out of right field receiving type of guy.
So. Yeah. All right. Kirby's quote yesterday about that, kind of talking about the deep running back core. He said, you guys want every guy to get 1,000 yards and 1,000 carries. We don't have enough balls to go around and do that. I'm trying to keep them happy. And you all keep talking about how many of them are going to have 1,000 yards. Now, I'm not really talking about it much, but I guess yeah. some others are.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the over-under again. This would be Keyshawn Vaughn, the star Vanderbilt running back. Number of rushing yards, over or under 75? I am saying over. I'll say he's going to have 86 on 12 carries and a touchdown.
Yeah, I think he'll go over that, but I think he's going to have more carries. I mean, that just seems to me like he's going to, with a new quarterback and all.
I think he's not going to have more than 12 carries, because if the game gets out of hand, they're going to be having to throw the ball a lot. So
yeah, I can see it that way. I can see them pounding him a lot early, though. And he'll, you know, I guess like...
He had less than 10 carries last year against
Georgia. Like Adam said in our last segment. You know, they want to use him quite a bit with new quarterback, you know, control the clock, all that type of stuff. So I can see him being a big factor.
All right, DeAndre Walker now in the NFL. I guess he might be on the injured list. But sacks for Georgia this game, that's been a big emphasis this offseason, making plays behind the line of scrimmage. Two over, under. I'm going to say over. I'm going to say they're going to get three.
I'm going to go, yeah, way over. I think it'll be several. I mean, five or six, I think.
Holy.
Because... I just think that, you know, new quarterback might try to do too much, scramble or something. They'll get somebody behind the line. I think they'll have a big game. Havoc plays.
All right, offensive linemen that will be playing before the fourth quarter, which is a key element because, you know, you're going to bring in all the subs when the thing is a blowout. Seven is the number. I'm going to say under. I'm going to say there's only going to be six, presuming that number 69, Jamari Salyer, can't go. That will either be Ben Cleveland or Cade Mays in reserve, and there will be your six.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'll go over just because – I mean, you never know about injuries.
So who's going to be the seventh or eighth?
I don't know.
There you go.
yeah, I guess your main guys are those, just main six, I guess. But who will be like who will be like seventh, eighth, and ninth, and all that?
I guess you could have one of the centers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. That'd be interesting to keep in track of, though, along with who's going to be the main receivers.
Last one is not an over-under. It's just a you pick a quarterback. The most passing yards week one of the current and former Georgia quarterbacks. You're talking Jake Fromm, Justin Fields, Jacob Eason. Jacob Eason is my answer. I'm saying he's going to have the most passing yards. And the reason why, Washington's going up against Eastern Washington. Fields has a chance. They're playing Florida Atlantic. Jake Fromm, I expect, will be a little bit more balanced against Vandy with the potent running game. I think he's going to throw the ball around a good bit. But Jacob Eason is my answer. Your sir is, what are you going with?
I'm going to have to agree with you. They're not on the red turf, are they? Isn't that the red turf, Eastern Washington?
This game is not at Eastern. It's at Washington.
They didn't do it. They didn't set up a home and home. I'm going to go Eastern just because I mean, Fields, all the talk about him during the preseason and spring kind of concerned me. The fact that, I mean, I guess we don't really know how much of a battle it was for him to earn the starting job, but it seemed like there was questions around him. So, yeah, I'll go Eason.
All right, we're not going to try to pick out the. That's it for the over under. By the way, I hope you enjoyed that segment. Maybe if we get some positive reviews on Twitter, maybe we'll make that a
Twitter, you know, even email.
if we don't get positive reviews, we might just make that a regular segment anyway.
Absolutely. Tell us on Apple Podcasts. Like, we've been calling it iTunes all this time, but it's technically Apple Podcasts. Go on there, give us a rating, all that stuff.
Look right.
up. Hey, do a search for Bulldogs Extra, and it should pop up. And if you were already listening to our old Dog Bites. Should have just switched right over.
Wait, now, so did you contact the folks in Cupertino, California and get Apple to change that for us?
No, done within our people. Maybe our people in Texas took care of it. I don't know. Moving on.
All right, we're not going to pick out the 70-man travel roster. You know, I don't really have a good sense necessarily of, like, you know, who's winning that 65-71 battle at practice, so we'll find that out. One thing I'm pretty fair to say is that, unfortunately, Bill Norton is out of the equation.
Why are you kicking a man while he's down?
The freshman, I'm just saying, okay. The freshman defensive end, as we had a report, got a DUI, a couple other alcohol offenses. Anybody you're curious to find out about? I mean, I am saying Kenny McIntosh is not going to go, given I think he's been doing some scout team work. I think they're going to take all six of these scholarship outside linebackers, unless somebody's banged up, which, yeah. You know, shows you how deep they are at that spot.
Well, I think I'm interested in the inside linebackers, you know, N'Kobe coming off his...
Well, he's going.
Well, I know that, but, you know, see how much he plays, I guess. Not so much the 70-man roster itself, but maybe a Channing Tindall. I mean, is he going to be on the roster?
Well, they're not going to take... they have two freshmen... inside linebackers. I mean, I don't know exactly who's on what special teams, but that's how they make
some
the
of those
trip.
Other big guys, you know, from last year that were talked about. You know, it'd be interesting to see who's in part of that.
All right, this is we focus a lot on Kirby Smart as the head Georgia Bulldog, fourth year coach. But Mark Richt is kind of still on the scene in a different role now as ACC Network commentator, analyst. I guess I saw via the Twitter today that he was over at Clemson, I guess, handing out like ice pops to fans there as they gear up for the Thursday Clemson-Georgia Tech game.
So he's still hating on Tech.
Now, Clemson-Georgia Tech game is not in our picks coming up because it's such a lopsided point spread, but also was notable that he took a selfie yesterday with Vince Dooley. I don't know where they were. I don't know if they were in Athens or Coach Dooley was, you know, maybe in a, actually, maybe he stopped by on his way to Clemson now that I just rings a bell. Maybe.
There you go.
Since
where's ACC headquarters at? Do we even know? I mean, like.
The ACC headquarters?
SEC is in Charlotte.
The ACC headquarters in Greensboro, North Carolina.
No, I'm talking about for the network.
The network is in Bristol, Connecticut.
That's because
the reason. I mean, look. Here's what they need to do. They need to make the SEC Network vacate the premises of the SEC Network studios, move that to SEC Country, and then let the ACC Network slide in there.
Charlotte. Yeah.
But
so let's think about this. Where's SEC Network moving? Atlanta?
They're not moving.
I mean, if they did,
I think they just redid their studio.
They did, but yeah. I'm saying, if hypothetically, if they did.
All right, let's get to the picks.
something to think about.
All right. Now, this is, you know, go to onlineathens.com. I think there is a, what do you call that?
A contest.
There's a tab.
Yeah, there's a tab there.
And you can make your picks. You can win $100. Well, it didn't used to be $50. It's now $100. You can win
per week.
$100 gift pack.
Yeah. It's a good little gift pack.
We are ineligible to win that?
Unfortunately.
What's in that gift pack? Do you know?
Not sure yet. Last year it was good. It's some gift cards and maybe a towel.
Is it like a pedicure, a spa weekend or something?
Could be. You know what? I'll research this for our next podcast and we will get back to you.
All right. Here we go. Let's make our picks. And I guess we're kind of giving away the secrets because it's supposed to be able to beat me. And there's probably a way you could kind of figure out.
Well, I think it will make them think like, hey, Weiser went that way. What is he thinking?
Well, I really hadn't studied this to the nth degree or anything.
Me
I'm gonna pull up some. I'm gonna mention what the point spreads are if I can get to it. Even though we're not counting it. All right, we're gonna start off with an SEC team involved. Ole Miss at Memphis. This is big for that part of the region in the what do they call that? The Mid South.
I don't know, but I know that everybody's hot on Memphis, which wouldn't be an upset. Because I believe I saw it too. 5.5 points. Does that look right to you?
I'm scrolling as you talk.
I do believe it's 5.5 for Memphis. So it's not technically an upset. They're playing at Memphis. I think the last time Ole Miss went into Memphis, they got spanked pretty handily.
All right. It's now, let's see. Looks like it's 5.5 is correct.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Walking in Memphis, Mark Cohn's song. Are you? Is that good for you? I like that.
Yeah, that's all right.
Jeez.
Yeah, you your feet. What is it? How far is it off of Bill? 6 feet.
How about 5 feet? How about Paul Simon's song? How about Graceland?
Let's get back on track here.
All right, I'm taking Ole Miss. Look, they brought in Rich Rod as offensive coordinator. They had the former Colorado coach as DC. These guys are kind of bigger profile than the head coach there, and I'm pulling Ole Miss for the upset.
Yeah, I went Memphis. I just, I think they're going to win. That's why I picked them.
All right, Eastern Michigan at Coastal Carolina. Why am I picking that game? Why is it even on here? Because there's so many lopsided point spreads.
Yeah.
This one's actually close.
There you go.
It is.
We got to make the game a little
Eastern
bit
Eastern Michigan by 6, and I know nothing about these teams except I'm going with Eastern.
Yep, well, I went Eastern too. I know Coastal Carolina had a couple of pros, you know, but that's about all I know about them.
The defensive back, right? Cornerback?
Yeah, cornerback, fullback, Michael Tolbert, a long time with the Chargers and Panthers, and went to my alma mater.
All right, South Carolina is playing North Carolina in Charlotte. This has happened, I think they were doing this like when Holtz was coach there, maybe even, this kind of matchup. Look, that point spread's it opened at 7.5. It is now 10 points South Carolina.
Wow.
This is Mac Brown's return to head coaching duties.
Didn't he name a freshman as the starting
Stacey
quarterback?
Stacy Sarles, the former Georgia offensive line coach, has been well-traveled, is on Mac Brown's staff. Give me the Gamecocks. Give me the Brian McClendons and the Thomas Browns. Who's Thomas Brown now on staff there?
I forgot about that. Yeah, I went with Gamecocks too. Did that line though? Seriously, did it fluctuate when you named the starting quarterback as a true freshman?
Which who are you talking about?
Didn't they name
who?
North Carolina.
Oh, I don't know. they did name it. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I just wonder.
Don't know. I didn't study that on a daily movement.
All right, let's pick up the pace here.
All right, Northwestern is at Stanford.
Yep. Stanford.
Quite a matchup of
brainy schools, yeah.
Academic institutions. I wonder what Vanderbilt would say about that if they are better than these schools. Give me Stanford. Back home, will the band be on the field? So is that only for the Stanford-Cal game? I don't know, but I'm taking Stanford. I'm not even pulling up the point spread. All right,
yep.
We're forgetting the point spreads now. We're just going to give you the matchups
fire.
And the picks.
Rapid fire.
Virginia Tech at Boston College. The Hokies last year for Bud Foster as defensive coordinator, and I say they go into, what is it, Chestnut Hill? I'm saying Virginia Tech.
Yeah, Virginia Tech.
All right, Boise State at Florida State in Jacksonville. I wonder if weather might be an issue there.
That hurricane's coming, isn't it?
Is it a tropical storm or hurricane?
Whatever is, we're gonna say we can nuke it, but
all
let's
right.
don't.
Look, I'm not.
I think it's heading toward Miami more than Jacksonville.
Oh, did you just make a political statement on this podcast?
No,
that's Ryan Dennis.
little joke.
Please direct comments at him. Look, you can't Boise. If this was home and home, but it's in Jackson. No, not going there. All right, Boise State is not winning this state. I guess I did. No, I am taking Boise State because I don't trust Florida State. They've kind of been a dumpster fire last couple of years. Give me the Broncos.
I don't trust them either, but I'm going to pick them. Home state, that's a long way to go for the Boise Broncos.
All right, SMU at Arkansas State. Arkansas State will be here in a couple weeks. Tough deal there with their head coach dealing, obviously, with the loss of his wife. I don't think he's back yet, actually, from his leave. I'm taking Arkansas State at home. I think they might be favored, too, but give me Arkansas State.
Sounds good. Maybe they're playing for him. I don't know. That's kind of why I picked him.
All right, Virginia is at Pittsburgh. This is the season opening game for the Cavaliers, who next Labor Day 2020 will be facing your Georgia Bulldogs in Mercedes-Benz. Give me the Cavs this time. I'm not buying the Panthers at home.
Yeah, fighting Bronco Mendenhall's. That's Virginia.
Toledo is at Kentucky. This is the kind of game I feel like that used to kind of sneak up and do something weird on occasion. I don't know. Give me the Wildcats. I'm sticking with Kentucky as they throw their hat in the ring as an SEC East contender.
A power? Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. Yeah, Kentucky though. I think they're good. They're good under Mr. Stoops there.
All right, Fresno State is at Southern Cal. This is not going to be a great year for the Trojans, and they might have a coaching change, but not based on this result. I'm taking the USC Trojans.
Yeah, I used to like Fresno State. They used to seem to play that Thursday night game or something, or a late Saturday game. I used to catch them, but I still went USC. Yeah.
All right, here's a big neutral site game. Oregon at Auburn. I think this is in Jerry World in Texas. This is the former Alabama assistant, big recruiting guy that's coaching the Ducks, and you have Auburn with Bo Nix making his debut as a true freshman starter. I'm taking Auburn, as this game just means more to the SEC team. No, I'm just kidding. 27-24, it's going to be a tight one. Give me Auburn. A lot of important game for Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I'm picking Oregon. 34-28 is my pick for Oregon to upset the Auburn Tigers.
All right, Georgia Vanderbilt. We all know we're picking Georgia. That's not much drama there. It's a three touchdown favorite. What are some of the keys of the game, Ryan? I'm going to say, look, they're not really keys. Well, okay, here's what I'm going to say. You can't have DeAndre Swift fumble the ball twice. You can't put a knee down on a punt. You know, basic stuff like that. I think they're going to be a lot crisper. They're going to be a lot more interested than the last time we saw them in a real game. I think it's going to be a blowout. I'm curious to see how, you know what the offense looks like. You hear a lot from these players about they're going to be throwing the ball around. I think they will. I think, you know, Vanderbilt lost Williams, their second round cornerback. They got some grad transfers on the outside there. You know, will D-Rob make a catch? We should have done that in the over under. I don't know.
I'll go over.
I think you need to just be not have too much mistakes and then, you know, let this big offensive line just wear down this Vanderbilt defense. And they can and they should. I think, you know, in the second half, that would be the difference, and they'll pull away. And big win in week one for Georgia.
Yeah, just don't overthink anything. I mean, it's, Georgia's much better. They recruited better, obviously, than most teams, especially at Vanderbilt. I think the big thing to watch is how Fromm and the new receivers, work together. Is Tyler Simmons really head and shoulders above everybody at that position? You know, is Matt Landers the guy? Who's going to step in? Maybe George Pickens. I think that's what you just kind of watch as Georgia should roll in this game.
Lawrence Cager.
Yeah, Lawrence Cager, which I talked to a Miami grad the other day who says Georgia got a steal there. I don't know how he's an expert, but, hey, he says Cager's good. But I think that's the main thing to watch.
Miami grad Mark Rick?
No, it wasn't him. If he stopped by Athens, I wish he'd have stopped by the studio and done a podcast. But anyway, I just think, Georgia's going to do what they always do. I think the whole change in offense thing is overblown, which I might have a column about on Saturday. Keep an eye out for it. But I just think that the main thing to watch is how the receivers and Fromm mesh.
All right, we are probably going to be cranking up the twice-a-week podcast starting next week as we're actually going to be in season. So check your smartphone feed on the podcast thing, and it'll probably just flow on in there sometime early week podcast, and then another one probably on Thursday-ish. So looking forward to heading to Nashville. I'm sure there's a lot of you out there that are going to be there. If not, you're going to be home watching on the SEC Network with snack of your choice and adult beverage if you are over 21.
Correct, Amundo. Enjoy.
All right, thanks for listening to the Bulldog Bites podcast from the Athens Banner Herald, and drop us a line. We've thrown out those email addresses, and you can find us on Twitter as well. Mine's Mark Weiser, MarkWeiser. Ryan is R. Dennis.
At onlineathens.com.
Is it? It's just R. Dennis?
Yeah, and then find me on Twitter at RhinoDennis19.
All right, the Bulldogs Extra podcast is presented each week by Zaxby's. Cure your cravings. Stop in today or visit Zaxby's.com.